In fact, it was information that's issued by the American government, and it was actually issued in one of their manuals, which was for use by their personnel of the Peace Corps working in South America. And it's essential information as to what to do if, whilst on active service, you meet a very large snake called an anaconda. Now, if you've ever met an anaconda, anaconda snakes take, apparently, I've never met one personally, apparently they take 10 men to carry one of these snakes when they're sedated suitably. But they're huge snakes, these things. And so, wanting to preserve the life of Americans in South America, they issued these guidelines as 10 steps as to what to do should you meet face-to-face one of these huge snakes. Right here. You might want to take notes, actually, because if you happen to meet one of these, it's good to know what to do, because I wouldn't know what to do. Step number one, if you are attacked by an anaconda, do not run. The snake is faster than you are, so don't even try to outrun it. Number two, lie flat on the ground. Put your arms tight against your sides. Your legs tight against one another. You can imagine this sort of picture. They're lying on the floor, really high. Number three, step number three is tuck in your chin. Number four, the snake will then come and begin to nudge and climb over your body. Number five, step five is do not panic. Step number six, after the snake has examined you, it will begin to swallow you from the feet. Always from the feet. Permit the snake to swallow your feet and ankles, but do not panic. Number seven, the snake will now begin to suck your legs into its body. You must lie perfectly still. This will take a long time. Step number eight, when the snake has reached your knees, slowly and with as little movement as possible, take your knife and very gently slide it into the side of the snake's mouth, between the edge of its mouth and your legs. Then suddenly rip upwards, severing the snake's head. Step number nine, be sure you have your knife. And step number ten, be sure your knife is sharp. Of course, if you get to step number 9 and 10 and suddenly realise that you haven't got your knife, you've got a bit of a problem. Now, this morning we're going to look at a detailed look at some more instructions. Not at those instructions. Those instructions are handy. Okay, so I hope you've all written those down. Next time you're in South America and you meet an anaconda, that's what to do. But today we're going to look at some specific instructions that the Bible gives us that are going to be more generally useful than what to do if you meet an anaconda. We're going to be looking at Psalm 119. So if you've got your Bibles, it'd be great this morning to turn to Psalm 119, because Psalm 119 is perhaps a unique psalm in that it's the longest psalm to start with, and it focuses exclusively on the Bible. So the psalm is unusual in that it's a book, it's a psalm about the book, about the Bible. And it's going to be something that I hope we're going to find helpful. And what I've done this morning is I've prepared a sheet for us. We don't do this very often. It's like a Bible study sheet, I suppose. And because Psalm 119 has got 176 verses in, I thought if I started reading that out to you, we'd be here a long time. So what I've done is I've taken some of those verses and put them in a way that will help us to get to grips with the book. So I'm going to pass this sheet around. Please, if you don't want to take it, it's not a problem. Don't be offended. It's simply something to help us rather than having to go through all the verses together, which there's many. What I've tried to do is I think there's something very exciting in Psalm 119. I think Psalm 119 actually has been written to help us, to give us some practical instructions about how to get to grips with the Bible. And so we're going to use it today as like a framework to help us get a little bit more into the Bible. So that's what I've done is here, is that I've put there, I hope you've got your glasses with you, because it's in small print. I've put there the different verses in the book Psalm 119, and how they help us understand different facets of the Bible. Okay, so that's the plan. So it's something for, it's like a sort of takeaway, something to take away, and something that hopefully will be helpful and useful to us. One of the things that, as you read Psalm 119, what you find is it talks about God's commands, it talks about God's laws, it talks about God's promises, it talks about God's statutes, it talks about God's precepts. It talks all different ways that are basically saying it's to do with what God says to us. And so this morning we're going to group all those together and not seek to differentiate between those different things, but just group them all together. Basically, it's what God says to us that is recorded in this book. And that's what we're going to kind of look at together. Now, one of the things that, as we look at this psalm, one of the things that comes out as you read through, one of the things I did a while ago is I went through the psalm and I kind of highlighted, as going through each verse, trying to pick out what is God saying, what is the thing that's trying to be communicated. The person that wrote this psalm, what was on their heart? What did they want to try and express to us? What did they try and want to show us and teach us? And as you go through it, two things speak really loudly. Two things speak really clearly as you go through the psalm. The first thing is that it seems very important that we learn the Bible. Okay, as you go through it, and we're going to look at it today, but one of the things that it seems to come back again and again and again is it is really important to this person that wrote this psalm, and therefore to God who inspired that person, that we not only read the Bible. Now, all of us here read the Bible. All of us maybe read a little bit, or some of us, maybe if you're visiting, you know, maybe you've read the Bible occasionally. But for some of us that we read the Bible, and it's good to read the Bible. Obviously, it's great to read the Bible. But one of the amazing things about this psalm is that the person that wrote it is actually saying that it's not good enough to read the Bible. In other words, in order to get the benefits from this psalm, in order to get the benefits from this book, in order to get what is in this book, the benefit from the stuff in here, I've not only got to read it, but I've got to do two more things. That reading it is necessary, and it's the first step, but in fact there are two more steps that are absolutely essential if I'm going to get the good stuff that God's put in here into my life. And those two steps are, firstly, that I learn the Bible, and secondly, that I obey it, that I do what God's asked me to do. And those two things are linked together. So it's possible, I suppose one of the things about, you could say, the Western church, us here in the West, is that probably in most churches today, most Christians have read a fair amount of the Bible. And there are these books like Read the Bible in a Year, you've seen these things, where you can read the Bible in a year. You can go through and read different parts of the Bible and therefore get through lots of the Bible in a year, which is a great thing, a brilliant thing and a wonderful thing. But, actually, one of the things that I think is a real problem is that I can know up here, I know a tremendous amount about the Bible. But actually, it's not just that what the psalmist is saying here in this Psalm 119. He's actually saying the important thing is not that we just know about these things, but actually learn them, actually internalize them, actually getting them into me, and that I'm actually going to do what God's asking me to do. And so that's a challenge for us, and we're going to look at it today. So what I've done in order to help us sort of unpack that is that I've put down a series of different questions, really, to help us dig into, look into, and see what the benefits are here in this book we've got before us. So the two benefits, reading the Bible is just the start. The benefit, we need to first learn the Bible, and second, obey the Bible. And so the V is, in the notes that you've got, the V is of course verse, so the particular verse of Psalm 119 that refers to that. And so rather than go through all the kind of the different verses, I'm just going to give you the overview, and so you don't have to just take it for word for what I'm saying, you've got there in those and that sheet the detail of these things. So how are we going to get the good stuff that's out of the Bible? How are we going to get the goodness that God's put in here, the power that's put in here? How am I going to get the power of what's in this book working in my life? Well, the first question I ask is, why is the Bible so important? And the person that wrote this psalm, Psalm 119, there are basically kind of seven things. I mean, I sort of found as going through this, there are seven reasons as to why this book, why the Bible is such an important book that can help us to see why it is important to take it on board and to learn it. Well, for the first reason is that the Bible is true, and from this, see there from the verses like we've got written down here, it talks about your law is right, your commands are true, your laws are right, they're righteous. There's something about the Bible which is like no other book. The thing about this Bible is it's 100% true. One of the bits in the New Testament, one of the verses that Paul is talking to Timothy, he says about the Bible, all scripture, all the Bible is inspired by God. And the word that he chooses to use for inspiration there, he chooses to use a word which means this, breathed out. It's exhaled. In other words, all the Bible is a result of God breathing out. So as God breathed out, in other words, as God exhaled, as God spoke his words, he spoke into the minds and lives and hearts of the writers of this book in a way that was supernaturally amazing. So that what they wrote down weren't their own ideas. But what they wrote down was in their own context of their culture, but it was inspired divinely by God. So that what the psalmist is saying here in Psalm 119 is he's saying that this, your words are true. They're reliable. There's something in this book which is true. And that's very important to kind of thing to appreciate, is that this book is the most amazing of books. And before I became a Christian, I used to read this book every night. But I read it as a history book, and I would read through chapter after chapter, and it was very interesting. And as a history book, it's good. It's a good history book, but there's a lot more, obviously, to the history book. And it wasn't until I became a Christian, after years of reading this book as a history book, that I realised there's a whole new kind of dynamic. There's a whole new chapters, a whole new kind of way of receiving what God's saying from this book that's absolutely wonderful. The second thing it says is that the Bible can be fully trusted. All your commands are trustworthy, verse 86. And then verse 140, your promises have been thoroughly tested and your servant loves them. Now the only way that you can test a promise is by having a difficulty in your life. Because if God's promising me something, to test it, I've got to have a situation or a difficulty or something in my life which is a problem, and therefore I need to trust God. Because if I don't trust, if there's no problem, I don't need to trust God, so therefore the promise remains a theory or a potential, something potentially to benefit my life. But if I have issues in my life that are difficult, if there are relationships that are tricky, if there's areas in my own work or my home or things that aren't good and difficult, that's the opportunity to test God's promises to me. And the person writing this psalm says, your promises have been thoroughly tested. In other words, he's talking out of experience. The guy that wrote this psalm was talking out of an experience of someone who had been through a whole series of things that were hard and not easy. Now that's important. So as we're reading this, as we're going to go through this this morning, the thing to bear in mind is the person that's wrote this isn't sort of somewhere up there, isn't in some ivory tower, isn't some intellectual who's kind of everything's easy and no problem and it's all theory. We're talking about something really earthy and something really born out of experience of trial, difficulty, problems, and things not going very well. But through all that, this person who wrote this has found that the Bible is the answer. And so that's why I would suggest today to you and me, this is relevant to our lives. Because we're all in that same situation. There's all challenges. Every one of us here today has got challenges we face in some area of our life. And so there's something I think we can learn. There's some keys here that we can pick up that are going to help us as far as getting more of the life in this book working in my life and in your life. I don't know whether you've ever tried abseiling. But I had a go at abseiling, and when I was a school teacher, this was a long time ago, about 20 years ago, I took this party of school children abseiling, and there was obviously a qualified instructor because I hadn't a clue what I was doing, we got to this cliff, and you're at the top of the cliff, and you've got to get down to the bottom of the cliff, and I thought, well, you know, I can't say to the kids, you know, I've never done this before, I'm scared absolutely witless. So I'm just going to meet you at the bottom, because you just have to sort of do it, haven't you? What choice can you do? So this is one of those adventure holidays for the children, and firstly we've been potholing, and I got stuck potholing. I got wedged in this pothole, which was a traumatic experience because I couldn't go forward or backwards. So after sort of recovering my nerve from that, I was faced with this abseiling I'd never done before. And of course, the abseiling, what they ask you to do, I've only been abseiling, but they ask you to walk backwards off a cliff. And the only thing you're trusting in is this rope. And I mean, you've just. Well, what can you do? There's a point of no return where you let your weight kind of go back, and when you get to that point, you know this is it. It's either curtains or this rope is going to take my weight. And thankfully, it does. And it's an exhilarating feeling. Really recommend it. Right? Great. It's great. Abseiling, real fun as you bounce down the cliff face. To get to the bottom, a real feeling of exhilaration. But it's the same. What we're talking about here about God's, about the Bible being trusted. In order to trust it, we've got to put our whole. We can't a little bit trust the Bible. We can't say, "Well, God, I'll kind of have you a little bit." God's asking me to put my whole weight of my life in His hands, and that's not easy. That's demanding. God's asking me to do something which is a bit scary. Because God's asking me to trust Him in such a way that actually it feels a little bit scary and feels a little bit, God, what's happening with my life? But it's only as I do that do I find that God's promises are true and that God is going to help me and God has got the power to hold my life. And I'm not just going to splat at the bottom of the cliff, but God's going to hold me. And so, the person that wrote this is saying, come on, the Bible is your commands are trustworthy. What you say, God, it can be relied on. And so just for each one of us this morning, I want to encourage us to trust God more. Trust the Bible. Trust what the Bible says. As we read the Bible, and as we start to get into it more and more, you find things in there that are challenging. You think, wow, goodness, that's a bit hard. Like my challenge of going down this cliff. But as I'm willing to say, okay, God, I might be scared, but I'm going to give it a go. That God's there, that rope's there to hold me as I put my weight and trusting in God. The next thing why the Bible is important, number three, is it's relevant today. It says that, God, your words are eternal, they're boundless, they endure. That's the most amazing thing about this book. Some parts of this book were written thousands and thousands of years ago. Thousands of years ago. You know, I recently found there's a Hebrew word, Pim, P-I-M, and it only occurs in one place in the book of 1 Samuel. And up until fairly recently, the scholars, the people that study the Bible, thought, what is this Pim? We don't know what it means. And it's a bit strange. And then they were doing some archaeology, and they came across, I think it was in Iraq and Iran, they came across little bits, little weights, and on those weights was the Hebrew word Pim. And they found that Pim was a measurement of weight. And they found in the particular, you know, in archaeology, they dig down and down and down. And so you can date when it was found. Because, you know, you know from the level that you dig down at. And so as they were digging down, they found these little weights called Pim. And these little Pims, they didn't appear above or below. They were only in one particular period of history. And that period of history was exactly when the book of 1 Samuel was written. And the more and more more and more, as far as the Bible is concerned, it's just such a wonderful book to see that God, in his fantastic wisdom and amazing power, has written this book for our benefit, and it's absolutely true and something utterly reliable. And it's relevant today. It's got relevance to our lives today. It's also good for the future. In point number four, verse 111 says, "Your statutes are my heritage forever." My future. So many people want to know what their future is. That's why there is such a big business in fortune telling, tarot cards, crystal ball reading, coffee cup reading, tea leaf reading. Such a big business in terms of knowing the future, because so many people want to know what is the future. The future is so uncertain. Our future is bound up in this book, because this is the book that God's written. And God wants to speak and show and direct us as we read and get into the Bible. Which leads us on to point five, about the Bible guiding us. Now verse 105 said, "Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light for my path." That's a really good verse to learn. 119 verse 105 says, "Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light for my path." Because what it's doing is saying that the Bible, God's words to us, give us illumination to show us our next step, and they illuminate the path for the future. Years ago, I was on holiday in the Lake District, and staying with a friend, and one of his hobbies was exploring copper mines. It's rather a dangerous hobby, actually, because exploring mines that are 100 years old is rather a hazardous hobby, because a lot of the floors that you stand on are wood, 100 years old wood. And so the potential to fall through that wood is very great. So, but in the reckless days of my youth, and we were exploring these copper mines, and as you go along, there's the disused copper workings, pools. Some of these pools were 1,000 feet deep of water. They were filled in with water as we're going along. But if you go down any of these tunnels, it's completely, utterly, totally no light. And so it's a really eerie, I don't know if you've ever experienced this. We don't find it in London. I mean, out where I live, we've got security floodlights front and back, and the birds sing all night because there's so much light. So we don't experience dark. Even we got blackout curtains, you name it, but it still doesn't mean our house is light. Day or night, it's light. But in the countryside, and especially down the mine, it was just absolutely pitch black. And so you just couldn't, if you move forward without knowing where you're going, you could fall wherever, into whatever. So you have these miner's hats, you know, like Bob had on this morning, with a light on. The only thing is, there was a few of us, and only one of these lights, you're taking in turn. But the thing is, that light illuminates, it shows you where to put your feet. And also, it casts a light ahead, which shows you where you're going and what the problems are. Now, for each of our lives, we so need to know the next steps in our lives. There's the issues you face this week. What's the next step in this thing? What's the next step in this area of my life? And for the future, where's my life going? Well, what's the direction my life's heading? Psalm 119 verse 105 says, "God, your word is a lamp to my feet so I can see the next step, and it's a light for my path so I can see the direction my life is going." So that's why our future is bound up in this book, because the way God's going to guide us and show us and lead us is through this book. He then goes on to talk about the Bible sustaining us. And then how enjoyable the Bible says, how sweet, God, are your words. How wonderful. They're my delight. He's enjoying the Bible so much. Let's find out. This guy who wrote this thing really, really found the Bible delightful. He was just absolutely intoxicated with it. He said, "It's my delight. It's sweetness. It's in my mouth. It fills my mouth." Okay, let's learn from this person's experience. How has he used the Bible? How has the writer used the Bible? Well, firstly, he's done one thing which what I started with. He's learned the Bible. And verse 11 says, "I've hidden your word in my heart that I might not sin against you." And that's maybe the most famous verse in this whole psalm. Psalm 119 verse 11. I have hidden your word in my heart so that I won't sin against you, God. In other words, what he's saying is I've taken your words, I've remembered them, and I'm meditating on them. They're in my heart, they're in my mind, they're kind of with me. So that I'm not going to go and just do my own thing, but I'm going to follow you, God. And then he goes on, he studied the Bible, I've sought out your precepts, he's obeyed the Bible, I've turned my steps, he's decided to follow God. He's put his hope in the Bible. He says, the guy that wrote this is saying, look, I've decided to put my hope in you. And finally, he's not given up, but kept going. He says, I've not forsaken, I've not departed, I've not strayed, I've not forgotten, I've not turned, I've not forgotten. The person that wrote this has been through difficult times. He's been through times of tremendous pressure, and as we'll see at the end, he's almost kind of given up. But the point is that he's kept going, that through difficult times he's kept going, and his source of strength has been this book. And he's got something out of this book which has meant it has taken him through difficult times. So the thing is, if today you're going through difficult times, or maybe you were last year, or maybe you will next year. I don't know. Who knows what happens in our lives? But God given us this book as a resource and as something in it that's going to help us through. That's going to get us through those difficulties. Often, when I'm going through difficult times, the last thing I feel like is turning to this book. Because I might feel depressed, down, lonely, sad. I don't kind of feel I want to turn to the Bible. Do you know that one of the things that always amazed me is when Jesus faced the devil in the desert, that's recorded in the Gospels, the devil came to Jesus, and Jesus just simply said three things, three different things the devil tried to trick him. Jesus just said, it is written, in the Bible, he said, it is written this, it is written this, it is written. He simply had in his heart already the verses from the Bible that were strength and encouragement to him, and something that the devil didn't like to hear, and that meant that he overcame that particular situation, that temptation. But what Jesus didn't say is, oh, this is tough, I'll just have to go and get out the scroll, go and find the bit where it is. There's something a little bit about bread and man shall not live. I'll go and look it up. Because he had those things in his heart. Yeah, he had them there in his heart. And so that one of the things that's important, whether now is a good time or a tough time, is that I'm hiding what God says in my life in my heart. That's one of the things I believe that is so important. In our sophisticated and complex world, really it boils down to something very simple. And really what it boils down to is me taking words from this book and hiding them in my heart. Getting them inside my heart. So they're there, they're ready, they're living, they're powerful, they're doing something. So that in good times, I'm delighting in it. I'm rejoicing, I'm being so sweet. And in difficult times, I've got strength, I've got power, I've got something flowing in my life that is really amazing. Move on to how's the writer using the Bible now? Well, he's thinking about and meditating on the Bible. He says, I recount your laws. I don't forget your laws. I meditate on them. I think about them. This word to meditate, you know that this a year ago, this hall was filled with people meditating. In fact, they called them the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame used to meet in here. And it was the Kung Fu crowd used to meet in here. And the way they meditated is they would just sit and for a quarter of an hour try to empty themselves of whatever was in their mind. It was an emptying process. And we didn't help it because the teenagers used to kick the football against the wall, so that didn't really help them with their meditating, which may be why they cleared off. But the whole thing about Christian meditating is Christian meditating isn't emptying my mind of things, it's filling my mind with what God says. And that's very different. I'm not trying to get rid of thoughts, my mind wandering over here or thinking about that, or I shouldn't turn the chicken off, or the thing, different things in my mind. What actually is I'm filling my mind with what God says. And so Christian meditating involves, firstly, number one, learning a Bible verse, a verse from the Bible, learning it. Secondly, is thinking about that. So during the day, when I'm walking down the street, my mind's in neutral, rather than sort of mulling over the plot of EastEnders, but my mind is actually engaged with thinking over, what is this meaning to me? Unpacking it. And then thirdly, it's actually trying to ask God, saying, God, what are you saying through these words? What is it? So I'm connecting with God and saying, God, what? Asking God questions. God, I don't understand. Teach me. Show me. What is this saying? How does this apply to my life? And fourthly, it's actually praying that verse back to God. So, for example, the Psalm 119, verse 105, your word is a lamp to my feet and a light for my path. I turn that back to God. I say, God, please guide me. Please show me. Please show me, as I'm reading the Bible today, show me something for the next step in my life. God, I don't know about the future. Should I study? Should I do this? Should I go and live there? What should I do? God, today as I'm reading the Bible, please, I'm asking that you give me some insight. Show me. Show me what you've got for my future. So Christian meditation's got those four steps. It's getting it, learning it, internalizing it, talking to God about it, and praying it back to God. So Christian meditation isn't something mystical and something sort of out there. Christian meditation is very, very practical and isn't passive at all. It's very, very active. I'm not trying to empty my mind of anything. I'm trying to fill it with something, which is what God says, the words of God. Nextly, he respects the Bible. I lift up my hands, I stand in awe, I give you thanks. My heart trembles at your word. He takes the Bible seriously. So I read a recent survey amongst a book club, people that love books, and they were asked to rate which book had the most impact on their lives. And number one was Lord of the Rings. That came out as the top of all the books that had impact on people's lives. The Bible was way down number 33. And in fact, it was below, can you believe this, but it was below Wind of the Willows. So Tales of the Riverbank were having a greater impact on people's lives than the Bible. And because our society doesn't respect, there is something that doesn't respect. This is number one bestseller in the whole world. But there isn't a respect. Often in the West, there isn't a respect for this book and what God's saying in this book. And so it's something that, you know, my heart, I need to just for myself to take seriously the things that the Bible talks about. And point three is he believes it. One of the things about the Bible is either it can be in three places. It can either be down there, in which case I'm looking, I'm analysing it, I'm looking, I'm thinking, how can I, it's a sense of me up here, my intellect, my abilities, trying to analyse this book. Or it's here, where it's something alongside me, that I'm sort of working alongside, or it's something which is here, which is above me, and which speaks down into my life. And this book has a unique claim. It claims to be the very words of God speaking to us. Now, often when books make claims, they refer to other sources and to authenticate what they're saying. The Bible doesn't refer to any higher source because it is the highest source. It only claims to be the very words of God Himself. And so, as such, there's a lovely verse actually in the Psalm 138 where it says God says, I've put higher than anything else my name and my words. That God's word is higher than anything else. And so if the Bible has that place in my life, it's going to impact my life, change my life, and help me to follow God. Nextly, he obeys the Bible. He enjoys the Bible. He experiences the Bible. He's got a passion for the Bible. Now, one of the things about obeying the Bible, obedience, it's a real non-politically correct word, obedience. It's not something we talk about much these days in terms of obeying, because it just sounds very sort of servile, doesn't it? Obeying. But yet, there's something in our relationship with God where God is asking us to trust Him with a childlikeness and to obey him, to do what he's asking us to do. Now, if that's just in some kind of cold, harsh, sterile kind of way, God saying, look, you just got to do it, that's really tough. But it still would be right. But actually, the amazing thing is, as this is the amazing thing this person that wrote the psalm found out, that as he started to learn the Bible, meditate on the Bible, that something started to happen in his heart, which meant it was easier to obey God. Because rather than it be this book out here speaking to his life, saying, you do this, you do this, you don't do this, actually it was something working in his heart, motivating and changing him, so that was something powerful happening in his life. So it became a delight to follow God. It became easier in terms of walking in the path God had, because what was working in him wasn't some outside thing or person telling him to do something. It was the very words of God working powerfully in his heart and in his life. But it started with him taking those steps of learning and meditating on God's words. And it ended up with this passion for God. So, I just want to he has a passion for the Bible. So finally, we're going to look at the pages where it talks about how does the writer plan to use the Bible. And he plans to use the Bible to meditate on the Bible. And he says, so first of all, he said that he has in the past learnt the Bible, meditated on the Bible. He is now meditating on the Bible. And in the future, he will meditate on the Bible. So there's three different tenses here. He's saying that it's basically saying it's a journey. That there's a journey in his life that involves learning, taking on board what God says. And that's something that's going to last the whole of his life. And there's something here, this is a real kind of heartfelt honesty today, is I honestly think there is a tremendous key in our lives which is found through taking the Bible seriously. Through me daily taking the Bible and learning verses from the Bible. And to learn those verses, I've got to learn the exact words. It's no good learning roughly what the board it says. Because if I learn roughly what it says, it's going to slip through my fingers. I have to learn exactly what it says. And also the part of the Bible where it says that. So that when I'm not quite sure what that is, I can go and look at it and refresh myself. And so maybe one a day or one a week, it doesn't matter how many. But what does matter, I believe, and what this psalmist found, is that as he was walking a path, he was walking a path where he was set. He'd started, he was doing it now, and he was going to continue till the day he died to learn the Bible. So I just really want to encourage you this morning and to twist your arm behind your back and say it's honestly the most powerful, powerful thing is to put effort into learning verses from the Bible. To ask God to show you and direct you which verses. Well, there's loads you could learn, obviously. But rather than just go for quantity, just say, God, which verse this week should I learn, should I think about, meditate on, pray about? Because there's something very powerful God wants to do in your life and my life this week. And it starts here in the Bible, as we get the verse that God has for us, particularly for us. I read of a missionary. He was living in a very remote part of the world, and he lived just as everyone else in that remote part of the world, very simply. And the only luxury he allowed himself every year was a new Bible, because he wore the Bible out that year. In a year, he wore it out, I just thinking about myself, I thought, well, I've been a Christian 20 years, and I've just worn out two Bibles. So I'm wearing out a Bible the base of 10 every 10 years. I'm not doing too good. Because when it wears out, all the spine at the back here falls apart, and the pages just fall out, and it's no good. So this guy was going through them at a rate of one a year. Because there was something that he knew, he'd discovered, he'd found this key. There is such a key There is such a key. Now, if you think in our lives, how much we're bombarded with media, with TV, with so many things and challenges, all these things in our lives. And it's an absolute challenge for us to carve out just some time every day that I can not just read the Bible, but I can learn it, meditate on it, and pray those words back to God. So one of the most helpful things in terms of my own prayer life, so I've been a Christian 20 years, so the first 20 years of my life I wasn't a Christian, the last 20 years I've been a Christian. The best thing that I've ever learned about prayer was that when thinking, what should I pray, how should I pray, was in fact realizing that I can take the verses of the Bible and pray them back to God. It's so simple. Because that way I know I'm praying what's on God's heart. Because I know if God's written it and I'm praying it back to God, I've got the confidence of being able to pray, say, God, and pray these things that are on God's heart, as God shows me, them back to His heart. And so there's such an amazing dynamic to be released more and more in our lives. This guy was on a journey. He was on a spiritual journey of learning, meditating, praying, and obeying the Bible. It was a journey that was going to take him through hard times. And in fact, finish off this, we took to how he prays. How did he pray using the Bible? He prayed three things, basically. He prayed, Lord, teach me through the Bible. Open my eyes, teach me, let me understand. And so he was praying, God, I want you to ask that you would open my mind to understand this book. That he realized that he couldn't, with his intellect and his training, education, really get to the bottom of this book. It's a spiritual book. So his prayer was, God, open my mind to get to grips with this book. Then he was praying also, secondly, as I read this book, keep me in the center of your will. I don't want to step out and do my own thing. I want to walk in the good things you've got for me. God, I know you've got good things for my life, and I want to walk in those good things. Help me as I read this book to find your will for my life. The amazing thing is, because God has got for each one of us such fantastic, wonderful things in our lives, and the future of those things are bound up in our understanding them, because if we don't know they're there, we're going to miss them. But as we come to God and ask Him to help us and to show us what they are, then God can lead us right into the full path of those things He has for us. And finally, he prays this 11 times, this prayer here. He's desperate, okay, difficult times. And basically it just boils down to, preserve my life. Just, God, I don't want to die. Just get me through this. And he keeps on praying it again and again. And he realizes that the answer is in God's words, in the Bible. So he realizes that he needs strength, he needs grace. He says, oh God, get me through this difficult time. And the answer to those things are in this book. Do you know, it's an amazing book, the Bible. And, you know, I think the challenge really for you and I is more and more, and we're all somewhere on this path, for all of us, myself, for us all this morning, we're on this path of doing two things, of starting to take seriously the importance of learning the Bible, and then starting to take seriously what God is saying to us through the Bible, and to be obeying what God's saying. And so I just really want to encourage us today to please to make whatever changes are necessary in your life, so that you start a regular thing of benefiting, as this guy had done in the Psalm 119, from learning, meditating, praying, getting the Bible inside him, and then doing what it says in our lives. Let's pray together, shall we? Father, thank you for, Lord, the amazing, amazing book that you've given to us, this Bible. And Lord, thank you that it was written over thousands of years,
and yet, Lord, has an integrity and has, Lord, a single message and speaks clearly, Lord, with your words to us. Thank you for the amazing detail, Lord, that archaeologists are finding more and more, Lord, of just how accurate and how wonderful everything is that you've put into this book. And Lord, I'm asking that you would really help us today, Lord, in this journey of taking your word seriously. And Lord, for each of us, wherever we are on this journey, I'm asking for your help. I'm asking, Lord, for your strength. I'm asking, Lord, that you'd help us, Lord, today to take your words and to hide them in our hearts. Lord, to take what you're saying and for it to be something which is living, powerful, and something that guides us, something that helps us, something that sustains us, something, Lord, that lives and burns in our hearts. God, I'm asking that you speak powerfully, Lord, through your words to us.